Hello and welcome to Open Minds UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I am here with Martin Bourgeois Willis.
Bourgeois. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a true story. I never know what you're going to say, and I don't think you do either.
You're right. Do you know when I knew? When
just
it came
when
out of my
it.
Mouth, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Do you know why I said like bourgeois?
I'm waiting to hear. No.
It was because you just told me the story about visiting some poor people, and you must have felt, not necessarily that you are bourgeois, but you probably felt a bit like you are. I mean, I feel humbled a bit, and I feel like, man, what a, you know, we just take it for granted all that we have.
Yes. You know, I'm not going to really get into the details. It was just some really nice people here in Russia that just – they basically live off the land and very hard lives, and they were just the sweetest people. So it was really a good – that was just happened tonight. I was talking prior to the show, and really interesting.
Yeah.
It's an interesting culture.
And for people who don't know, I mean, people who might have missed the last couple shows or whatever, you're in Russia, and this is like your third week in Russia.
That's right. Yep. And seeing a bit of the country. Going to be in Moscow next week for about a week.
Visiting with Putin?
No, actually, he was in Sochi when I was in Sochi. So
spends
he has a big, huge compound there. It goes on for like blocks.
Wow.
And he was there then, and I think that's where his home is, but I really don't know for sure.
Huh. Where are you
but,
now?
Yeah, he does. I'm in Novorossiysk, which is on the Black Sea. It's directly across from Istanbul, Turkey, 700 miles straight across the Black Sea is Istanbul, Turkey.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I remember right, I remember writing about a UFO story there.
In Novorossiysk?
Yeah.
Because there have been a lot of sightings, and I've tried to connect with people here about that. And so far, I haven't been able to find any English-speaking people I can do a show with.
Mm-hmm.
But someone is trying to set me up with someone on the Rufars Facebook page from Russia. Moscow is trying to set me up with English-speaking ufologists to record a show on Podcast UFO when I do a show, a pre-recorded show. So I'm looking forward to that if that can work out. I haven't heard back, but hopefully that will work out.
Mm-hmm. Cool. That sounds fun. So you're having a good time.
Having a great time, and it's really different. And you know what? We really take a lot of things for granted. I just want a cold glass of water.
Oh,
and
really?
And everyone, you know, no one drinks cold water here. They, you know, and it's just the little things you get used to that it's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to go back and have a nice cold glass of water.
When are you going to be back?
Around the 1st of June.
Okay. And that's assuming they let you out.
That is right. As far as I know, I can still get out, but you never know here. You really don't.
Uh-huh.
Not even joking.
Mm-hmm. You and your chihuahua can get out.
That's right. Yeah, we had to bribe the chihuahua in. We might have to bribe him out.
Yeah.
You never know.
Well, good
luck.
If
you have money, you can do about anything here. But, you know, that's you got to have the cash.
Yeah. Well, I hope you get Peanut out because I hope you bring him again this February to the conference because I'd like to chill with Peanut again.
He's a great one,
He's a cool dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, this is actually a UFO show.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah.
But
Oh, I
it's my
thought we were
fault.
talking.
I
Yeah.
wanted to hear
Okay.
about what you were there. But we talked a little bit about UFOs there for a second, I think. But that was the travel portion of the show. We do have someone talking about UFOs later in the show, and that would be our guest interview. And that is Cheryl Costa, who writes for the Syracuse New Times on UFOs.
Yeah, she's an interesting person. Has I was surprised at when I had a talk with her of some of the data she had in the sightings, especially out, toward Long Island and stuff like that. Really amazing.
What's fun too is I found out how her blog came about, and that's a great story. So that's a lot of fun. And seeking to write a UFO blog, which is interesting. So yeah, it's really cool that she's got this online. It's very popular, writing about UFO stories. We talk about her, how she goes about choosing the types of stories she writes, and lots of fun stuff, lots of cool sightings and stuff. So yeah, it's great. She actually spoke at the UFO Congress this last year.
Was it last year or the year before, 2015?
Maybe you're right. I get them all mixed up. You're
I
probably
think it
right.
was.
Yeah, I think you're
Yeah.
right. It was the one before. But as for the conference, we've already got the a lot of speakers. Oh, I've got them. We're going to be getting names out fairly soon and taking registration fairly soon too. So we're already getting ramped up for the next conference.
Can you drop any names yet?
No.
All right, never mind. Let's move on.
Not yet, but
Okay.
soon. So, again, as usual, a great list of names and some people you probably haven't heard speak that you may have thought, oh man, I would like to hear that person speak. And now you're going to have your chance. And of course, these are people who we know have some great work that they've done recently. So, very, very exciting stuff.
Great.
But before we get into that, let's get into UFO news, and that's what you usually are here to join me and talk about. And usually you have a UFO story to talk about to start things off. Is that the case today?
It is indeed, and this takes place near New York. It's actually in New Jersey, and this happened back in June. On June 29th, 2015, it's a MUFON report written by by Roger Marsh, and basically, it's a New Jersey witness says UFO lights are connected by a black bar. Now, at night, I'm not really sure how they'd know there it was a black bar or not, or a different color or whatever. But this took place in the Monroe Township, which has a population of approximately 40,000 people, and the people that reported it were videotaping it. Two bright lights in the sky that appeared to be connected, and according to the witness, they said basically, here's a quote here. So I looked up in the sky and saw a large bright white light attached to a smaller bright light that appeared to be a black bar attaching them, and unquote. And so this was looked into by New Jersey field investigator Glenn Green, and he said the pictures were actually above average. And he wrote in his report the fact that they calmly walked back into the house when the object was in full hover outside was telling. I'm ruling out a glider being towed because it was at night, and the angle of the object was very low and not moving, tends to rule out satellite. And this one, they ended the report as an unknown so far. So anyway, I thought it was a pretty interesting observation. And there's a video. You can check out the video and watch it for yourself. There's a little kid that's pretty cute saying some things about it. But yeah, it's a good story.
What did you think of the video?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I thought, they're just stationary lights. It's always hard to tell when it's lights in the sky at night. But they were definitely unusual and really hard to explain what something like that could be. It's definitely, I wouldn't say it was anything to do with Chinese lanterns or anything like that.
Yeah, I agree. Not Chinese lanterns, but it's hard to tell. It's kind of a short video, just a couple lights in the sky, so you can't really make a whole lot out. And like you said, you can't make out a black bar in between the lights. So maybe just visually they could see that better than it recorded. But the little girl is cute on the video.
Now, I understand also about when – when I don't know if you've ever tried to tape anything with your like your iPhone or something, but
yeah, it's hard.
See, yeah. I mean, it's so much better to see by the naked eye than it is by one of those things.
But yeah, by far. I mean, at night, I mean, you can't really zoom in and out. Even if you could, there's not much light, so it can't get as much detail. So you're right, it's difficult. Although, Phoenix MUFON or Arizona MUFON had a meeting on Saturday, and they brought in Ruben Uriarte, which was a lot of fun. You've had him on your show, I'd assume.
Yes, a couple of times.
Yeah, he's great. So, and he's out of California, but we did a night watch, and we walked up this path, and the chief investigator for the area, Dennis Freyermouth, I've talked about him, raved about him before, and but he brought this black light, and I've never seen a live scorpion out here in Arizona, and with this black light, however, we went through and we found a couple. They're so small and they blend in, and they're skittish. They don't run up to you. They try to hide, and it's hard to get them to even move if you poke and prod them, like, you know, which I don't recommend at all. And you can hear in this video, I'm telling someone, stop it, quit it, you know, but because I'm going to post it. But, yeah, it looks really cool. They glow in the black light, and it's kind of amazing. So that's just a night video where lighting this thing up with black light made it visible on the phone, and it looks really cool. Just reminded me of a night video I took not-so-anomalous object, but cool looking.
Right. Now, did you – do any, like, was this a Skywatch, did you say?
Yeah, Skywatch. So luckily, you know, we were able to take a couple of we've got a couple night vision things here at Open Minds that we took up there, but it was a little cloudy, so we couldn't see a lot of sky. In fact, I don't even know that we were even to spot it able to spot a satellite, because it was so cloudy earlier on in the night. It cleared up a little bit, but it was still a lot of fun. We didn't see anything anomalous this time, unfortunately. But and we were there with our night vision camera ready to capture. But yeah, that's something that we do out here occasionally. However, for the rest of the summer, it'll probably be too hot. So we won't be able to do that again until it cools down in the late fall.
Now, I've always heard that it really cooled down at night, even during the summer, and that it doesn't, huh?
No. Unfortunately, wow. Sometimes it'll cool down like 10 degrees, but of course, if it's 105 or 110, it's still 100 degrees at night, and that's too hot. So, some parts of the year it does cool down a bit more, but some parts of the year sometimes it's just as hot at night. I mean, it just, like, the temperature gets a little hotter. Even once the sun goes down, and so it like stays consistent where it barely cools down at all. So it still gets too warm at night. Times like this, where actually the next few days are a little cooler, but times like this time of year cools down a bit more. So it was perfect out there the other night when we were out there. It was really nice.
All right.
So, yeah, so a couple other stories to get to. This one, did you see the interview Leslie Kane did with?
Yes.
So you were able to look at it.
Christopher, yes, very, very good.
Christopher Mellon. Yeah, yes. So this was a great interview that she did. And I wrote a kind of a summary of it, and kind of, I think, the core part of what he was trying to say, essentially. But her interview, the whole thing is fascinating. So Leslie Kane, of course, she wrote the book UFOs, Generals, and Other Important People Talk About UFOs. That's not what it's called, but I can't remember the exact
General
list.
Pilots and Government Officials.
Yeah, there you go. And it's a great book, and it's New York Times bestseller, and it, I think, made an incredible impact on this field and people taking it seriously. And one of the people she's been able to contact because of her careful way she approaches this topic is Christopher Mellon. And he is a guy who's retired, but he worked in intelligence, with intelligence organizations his whole career in the Department of Defense. He even won a couple of awards, including a Defense Intelligence Agency Director's Medal. At one point, they show him with a picture with different officials. He worked for a couple presidents. So, but he's always been into UFOs ever since he was a kid, which I think is fascinating. And he talks about this. But he essentially said that there's, first of all, Hillary Clinton, although she was Secretary of State, would not know anything necessarily, because he says, and he actually sent me, because I had a mistake in my story, I wrote that even if she was president, she wouldn't have access to compartmentalized programs, or as he calls them, SAPs. Those are special access programs, which means they're very highly secret programs. And he says in the past they have denied people who have asked from the White House. I wrote that, and he said he actually got a hold of me, which was really exciting. And he said, I just want to clarify, because this wasn't clear, and this is an important point, that, however, even though as Secretary of State we could deny her access, we don't deny presidents any access. If a president asks about a program and wants to be briefed on it, we will do it. The statement he said was, we move mountains for presidents, which I think is really interesting. He made it sound as though presidents don't really ask, because really they rely on their advisors, and their advisors giving them information, so they usually don't stray outside of what their advisors are giving them. But that's interesting.
I had the pleasure of having a conversation with Christopher actually
day.
Real interesting. And he did mention about this thing, having going back and forth with you about it. But it's really interesting to think this way, that it's possible that when a president gets in office, even if they thought, well, this is one of the things I want to check out, that they're so overwhelmed with all other topics, especially, you know, the state of the world, that this is – when it kind of goes down on the list, and Chris himself said, you know, this is probably the most important information ever that we could find, if we do find that we are actually being visited by, extraterrestrials, would be like the most important thing humankind could know.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say if Hillary gets in, who knows if, you know, she'll even remember that statement she made a couple of times. I'm sure she'll be reminded of it.
Yeah, I'm sure she will, but we'll see how far she wants to push it. But the thing is that he feels, even if she does decide to pursue it, there's nothing to tell. He says that, having even worked with and visited Area 51, he had an oversight. He was involved with auditing
sort of like underwriting or
groups.
Something. Yeah.
Going. So he was there to touch on all these programs, and the entire time he said he never saw or was given an inkling that anyone was interested in UFOs, even at Area 51. There were people that contacted him, like this incredible sighting from a Navy guy, but that these guys, you know, nothing in an official capacity. And what's interesting is he says, very much like John Alexander says, that this frustrates him, that they all kind of treat the UFO topic like a hot potato. If there's a UFO sighting, right, they try to bury it. They don't want anything to do with it because it's embarrassing. So they want it to go away. And so it's kind of like Alexander calls it ignorance or idiocy, I think he's even called it. He's a little stronger. But Mellon is frustrated that they don't take it seriously, and he thinks that they should. But essentially he's saying there's no big government conspiracy there, though.
And you know, I think one of the things that was when we had the conversation, a point that he made was that he's really going out on a limb doing this. And I thought that was really interesting. He says, this is my reputation, and, you know, what if I want to run for office and all that? So he's really going out on a limb because he wants like the UFO data to really do scientific research. He wants people to take it seriously, and he wants it to be approached right.
So when he's joined the UFO data group, this is a group of scientists and other professionals who are trying to put together some kind of telemetry. We've interviewed Mark D'Antonio often, who's doing something similar, but unfortunately they're doing these separately. But where they're going to be able to try to observe these stations that will observe the skies to try to capture video, but other telemetry like electromagnetic frequencies and different light spectrums and stuff like this when an event occurs to better understand the phenomena. So he's involved with that because he thinks that science needs to really pursue this. So, yeah, I think it's – I even though some of you are like, oh, man, this guy's full of crap, you know, probably thinking that right now. Read his interview, the full interview. You can find links to the interview and a summary of the interview at openminds.tv, but read the full interview. Definitely go and do that because it's – I think it's great. So
it is really.
Did you talk to him on the phone?
I did, and if I can say a little spoiler, he's going to be on my show June 1st.
Oh, okay. Wow, great.
Yeah.
Cool. He's like really into this topic.
And basically what I've asked him to do, there's a lot of comments. There's like 150 comments underneath the posting on the Huffington Post. And I said, why don't we address some of these intelligent questions that are on there that people are asking? Like,
really? There's intelligent questions in the comments?
There's a couple of that. There's a couple. That's why I said, you know, weed them out and ask a few of the ones that actually make sense and are addressing. Because when someone does an interview and they post questions under it, a lot of times people really do have those questions, and it's good to address them.
Yeah. Well, they're not too goofy,
right,
or just being flat out jerks, which so many people do. Nancy Drake or Naomi Nadia Drake is her name. I did all the female end names. Nadia Drake, Frank Drake's daughter, did an article about how she thinks it's ridiculous that Hillary's talking about UFOs, but she's really disparaging the whole topic of UFOs. And which is unfortunate, but man, oh man, people attacked her and they were mean and they just sound like idiots, unfortunately. I mean, of course, I think there's a great argument to be made, and I did comment about it, how it's unfortunate. Even well-known UFO researchers are in there attacking her personally, and which is really sad because they just sound like complete jerks, and they are being completely unprofessional in trying to make their argument. But so even, you know, the most of the comments were just so heated, so just awful that, you know, there's a way to have civil discussion with people, and people appreciate that much more, as Mellon said in his interview, which I thought was really great.
Yeah.
But moving on to the last story, just very quickly, is I just think it's kind of fun, is this ghost story that has to do with UFOs. And it's a UK story. It was posted by Roger Marsh. It's a MUFON story. where this couple was at St. Just in Cornwall, and this actually happened in 1993. They were in their little MG car, and they decided to go get some fish and chips and then go to the coast. There's these coastal, beautiful coastal cliffs to watch the ocean and enjoy their little meal. Well, while they're there, they see a guy coming up the cliff. He looks like they call him an olden time smuggler from the 1700s or 1800s period, and they say he has a smuggler type of coat, a large wooden staff, and a small barrel or keg under his right arm. They said he looked like a character from Poldark, and Poldark is an era television show that's been on, well, here in the US, it's on PBS and Masterpiece Theater. You can catch it, but it's a BBC show. It looks great. I haven't seen it, but I love those shows. But yeah, so you could see what they're talking about. Anyways, this guy disappears, and then soon after, behind them, there's this white orb that is floating there before it disappears. Of course, the orb being the UFO, and they felt that this, what they feel is a ghost, had something to do with this UFO. So kind of a fun, weird sighting that was reported to MUFON
It's
recently.
either interdimensional or a time travel right there.
Yeah.
No, that
Interdimensional.
is a strange one. And I've heard people say that they think everything's connected, all these things are connected. And sometimes you hear stories that makes you wonder if there may be a little bit of truth to that.
Weird one, but
Yeah.
pretty interesting. And I don't know, the visuals are fun, them going to, I think we can all kind of imagine those beautiful cliffs that are in England that they have, and taking your little car and having some fish and chips and experiencing this. I think, it's kind of what goes on in your mind, especially for Americans. If you're vacationing, you think of the television shows that relate to these sort of things, and
Right.
so funny, so fun. Well, that's it. That's all the news I got for today. What about you?
I'm good over across the pond.
Okay, yeah, you're way across the out there. So you enjoy your trip, the rest of your trip out there in Russia, and be safe.
I will. Thanks, man. Have a good show with Cheryl.
All right. Yep. Thank you very much, and thanks for joining us. Let's go ahead and talk to Cheryl. I am very excited to have Cheryl Costa on the phone. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Terrific. It's an absolute treat to be on your show, sir.
Oh, well, it's wonderful to have you. We've met several times at the conference. You spoke at our conference, which was wonderful to have you speak. And of course, I, like probably many of the listeners, are reading your articles online quite regularly.
Thank you. I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, so I guess we'll start off with because this is the first time you've been on with a podcast, surprisingly. Over the years, having followed your work, but now you're here. And so, what originally got you into UFOs? Have you been into this since you were a kid?
Yes. I guess my first, what really got me into it, I was about 12, and it was the tail end of August, in upstate New York. That's really seriously getting into fall, and it was a clear blue sky one Sunday afternoon. We were coming back from an uncle's house in the country, and we were coming down the side of a hill looking westward, and sit parked out there in the sky at about 45 degrees from the ground was this big silver ball. Clear blue sky, no clouds, there he was. And it was there for a good 20 minutes. My father pulled the car off the side of the road, and we sat there and looked at it. Mom explained to me, what this might be. Yeah, okay, it could be an Air Force balloon or something like this, but, it also might be people from another world. And we talked. She was very, very, very very, very gentle with explaining it to me. And that got the two of us really, really bonded in that one context, okay? Mm-hmm. And what was funny was my father started driving again, and I watched that thing for about another 10 minutes, and when it decided to go, this thing was no balloon. This thing shot off like a starship. Pew, gone, you know?
Wow.
And it was amazing to see, and it changed my life. Now, the deal is from that time on, through high school, my mom and I would go to the library. This is late 60s. We were getting books by Frank Edwards and all of these guys, you know. And if I'd get it, I'd read it and share it with her. She'd get one, read it, share it with me. And then I went off to join the Air Force in 1970. And I had an experience when I was in Vietnam. It was Christmas Eve. I was walking to the base chapel to go to midnight mass with some friends, and I looked up in the sky and saw this thing moving across the sky. I thought it was a star, and I thought, well, maybe it's just a plane and plenty of jets in Vietnam at that time. And all of a sudden, I'm looking up at it, and it stops. Sits there right underneath the constellation Taurus, and then starts darting around in a weird little pattern, and then bang, he was gone. You know? And again, I, for the probably the next 20 years, I was read on the topic matter, read mm-hmm. everything Stanton Friedman ever wrote, but I was more largely a UFO bystander.
Mm-hmm.
I was interested in the topic. In the early 90s, I got hospitalized about the time I was between apartments. And a friend of mine, he said, hey, I'm taking care of my dad. He's got taking chemo. Here's the keys to my house over in the suburbs of Maryland. And he says, go over there, feed the cat, pay the utilities. So I did. I went over there, and I recuperated over there for several months. Okay, this guy had every hardback first edition of all the major UFO publications up until about 1991.
Wow.
So I, and the house had no cable, so I had plenty to read. And so we're going, okay, fine. Again, I'm a bystander. I'm interested in the topic. I was very conversant in it, but I really didn't talk about it to other people unless I knew they were into it. Okay, here we go. Many years later, I'm a career person with Lockheed Martin, 32 years. I retired back in 2011. And again, nothing to do with UFOs. I'm working for a newspaper, and one night I happen to look up at the CNN.com. You know, they have little sidebar stories. And there was this one that said, oh, UFOs have been on the decline, and maybe they were all just an urban legend anyway. And I opened up the article, and it sat there, and it had the nerve to sit there and say they'd been on the decline and all this baloney. I'm going, man, that doesn't feel right. So for the first time in my life, I went out like to the MUFON website, got on their CMS system there, their website, and I pulled a few charts over, like, you know, just quick samples for New York State over the years. And, you know, and like I said 2 years ago at the UFO Congress there in Arizona, I said, what memo didn't the UFOs get? Because it was on a steep curve upwards.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, I'd had enough. I was finishing my, it only took me 40 years to get my degree in writing, and I started approaching newspaper editors here in upstate New York. I got laughed out of 13 different editors' offices. And with my proposal to write a weekly column. In fact, I promoted it as an online feature, since a lot of newspapers were starting to try and get online type of material going. And then I went to the Syracuse New Times. It was a weekly. And Larry Dietrich was the executive editor there. And when I went in to go pitch him, he wouldn't take the pitch initially. He sat there and talked to me. He knew what the topic matter was going to be about.
Mm-hmm.
And he apparently had read a lot of the same books I had, because we had a great conversation about it. And he said, okay, show me your slides. And it was like six pieces of paper. Here's the charts. Here's the facts. Here's how many people, you know, that National Geographic poll from a couple of years ago, and I had all that, and I said, look, the demographics are here. If we go and do an online blog, it'll be good for boosting your fledgling online presence, which is what they were trying to do. and they hadn't had a lot of luck at that point. So they put me up, and this is back in July of 2013, and I've been there 3 years now, and I'm one of the heaviest read columnists at the paper with international readership.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Which is cool. So we've been doing it now for 3 years, so this is over 150 articles. I do charts and graphs. I'm big into statistics and that type of thing. And a lot of the stories that I wrote have been principally stuff that was here. The column is called New York Skies. And what I pretty much did was I crawled through the two national databases, looked at stories of people, what they said. People said, well, you can't prove all that stuff. I said, I don't have to. It's what people say they said, saw. You know, and that's the tone I've taken. And what's happened is because I was very respectful of the topic, you know, a lot of people in the press tried to, for years, always been very snarky and tongue-in-cheek about it, until recently, really. And so I started getting emails inviting me to backyard barbecues. We want you to come over and talk to our Uncle Ralph, you know. So I'd go over and have a glass of lemonade with them and a hot dog, and Uncle Ralph would sit down, and you can see it in their eyes if they're genuine. It's like a case of, like the soldiers have a case of PTSD. You can see it in their eyes. They're reliving it again when they're telling it to you. And I've heard some amazing things. So I've written them up as they come. I have to change the names. We have an understanding with the editor. We change the names, even if we know the real names. And unless they're dead, that's a different ballgame. But that's kind of how I got into this.
Yeah.
Somebody had to go out there and tell the truth.
How cool. Well, that's really cool that you were bold enough to kind of take this idea of a UFO, weekly and after trial and error, you finally got someone to take it, huh?
Yep, that's how it worked. Like I said, I went out there and pitched for probably 6, 7, 8 weeks. It was like about two editors a week. And one of the interesting things is I reached out to the local bureau chief of the Associated Press at one point. And you know the answer I got back from him?
Huh.
We're not the old Associated Press. We don't report things like that anymore.
What the heck was that supposed to mean?
That, I don't know. I guess they just decided they drank from the same Kool-Aid the New York Times did many years ago and decided they won't report the topic. Although, now it's sort of changing with everything going on with Hillary.
Yeah. So that's interesting. Yeah, but it's really cool that you were able to get on there. Of course, is the Syracuse New Times, like we have the Phoenix New Times here, are they kind of owned by the same group?
No, they aren't. And you know, it's funny. About 4 months ago, I wrote them a proposal and said, hey, here's a chart of what the UFO sightings in the last 15 years. This is part of my national magnitude study I've been working on. And I sent them a chart and said, hey, here's the UFO sightings for every county in Arizona for the last 15 years. I said, here's the column I write for the New Times, and I gave him a link, and I said, how would you like me to write a similar thing? We'll just call it Arizona Skies, and I can write a similar thing for you guys. It's done tremendous things for our online edition. Not a peep out of them. And I told him, I said, hey, you've got Phoenix Lights coming up. Why not christen this in with that kind of flavor? No, not a peep out of them.
Yeah, not surprised, you know. There's a strong, you know, UFO presence out here with lots of UFO researchers with the Phoenix Lights. And all the other media actually is really into it. And, you know, they talk to us, they talk to MUFON quite a bit in the area. But the Phoenix New Time is one media outlet, perhaps the media outlet that covers this the least, actually, interesting enough.
Yes, and that's what surprised the heck out of me. I probably would have been better with the what's that one out there in Fountain there?
Fountain Hill. Yeah. They send a reporter. And what I found is interesting, that's why it's neat that the Syracuse New Times started running her articles, because like in Denver, the alternative paper was called Westward, and they also were kind of hostile to the UFO topic. In fact, we had a symposium out there, and they made fun of it. And then the reporter came, and he loved it and wanted to write a follow-up about how credible it was, and they wouldn't let him do that. So similar, I think they fight for credibility, so they're careful about that sort of thing. So it's neat because the Syracuse New Times is kind of a alternative paper out there, huh? And but they do, I mean, they've got your story on the front page right now, I'm noticing.
Yeah, I'm one what they call a, as my editor puts it, I'm a Friday guy. You know, they they put me up on Fridays. There's new content on the CV. Print edition is published on Wednesdays, okay? But the online edition, and I'm not in the print edition. But the online edition, there's new material, new columnists almost every day. And we rotate through when we started doing the UFO column, there were three of us, and we couldn't get bloggers to come and work with us at the paper. And then we started developing some serious credibility. We had these really good blogs, and suddenly the bloggers started coming to us, and they've got about 10 that they rotate right now. So it's new material every day. In fact, when I was at the 2014 UFO Congress, I reported live every day from the convention. I would go back to my room at night and knock out a 400-word, 500-word article. My spouse would proof it, and we'd put it online, send it back to the editor, and he had it up the next morning first thing.
Cool.
So that was kind of a unique thing. Plus, I was shooting video up in the suite, and I was sending back video clips and interviewing Jan Hardison from MUFON, and I got to talk to the guy from Fire in the Sky and all that kind of stuff. And it really does great things for an online column to have that kind of visibility.
Right, and I mean, that's what's great that it's online. Really, who cares about the print, especially for me, because that's far away. I'm never going to see the print, but... all of us get to enjoy your online articles all around the country and, well, around the world.
Well, that's the cool thing. I'd been up about a year, and just before I came to speak at the Congress, the December 31st editorial for both the print edition and the online edition, Larry Dietrich wrote a editorial, and he says, the most popular column at this paper is not in print. It's on our online edition. And he says, Cheryl's got international readership. We think if we put her in the printed paper, we'd probably hurt her.
Yeah.
So they're quite content with keeping me the electronic name. And I mean, at one point he called me up and told me I had 1,000 readers in Russia. You know?
Wow. That's cool. Yeah,
so.
So what are people interested in out there? What have been some of your big stories?
You know what they really like? Mm-hmm. And we don't know. My spouse has got the psychology degree, so she says it's because it's comfortable. Mm-hmm. They like vintage stories. One of the earliest recorded ones we have here in New York is set around 1790 up in Scolari County.
It was
a Dutch settler up there saw what he called to be a meteor, came in around sunset from the north, and when it got down into his field and hovered over the field, he said it was like a long snake, and the front end of it, or what he thought was the front end, looked like a tree uprooted. So if you kind of hold your arm out with your hand like a claw, you got an idea what it looked like. And he said it was hot, and all the smell of it coming down, it was a tremendous roar. He said the place smelled like sulfur and tar for 2 weeks around his farm.
Wow.
And it was recorded in, I got that one from the Historical Society up that way. We had another one, we got a couple of them in the New York City area. One lady saw a huge cross in the sky about 1861. There was about the same time, about a year later. And this was reported by 8 other newspapers from Albany all the way down to Norfolk, Virginia. Okay, they saw these two balls of fire going across the sky. But the thing that the New York reporter said, you know, it was in the sky going across the horizon for almost a minute, unlike normal shooting stars, like, oh, there, it's gone, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was in the sky. We did a calculation on it, myself and another physics person sat down and calculated the window of the an early evening sky would be about a 60-mile arc, and we estimate the speed to be about 3,500 miles an hour, which is a good speed for a reentry for something like a space shuttle. And it was last seen in just going into a cloud bank in Norfolk, Virginia, near Norfolk, Virginia. It's these older stories people like. I guess, as my spouse puts it, they feel comfortable with something that happened some long time ago. I find that if I report anything much past about 1990, people get a little twitchy about it.
Yeah.
It's too personal.
Interesting. Yeah, it's weird how people are a bit like that. Because I love, you know, even the 50s, 60s type of stuff, but often I'll get some flack when we print about that. Oh, you know, what about the new stuff? But there's exciting stuff, and of course, going way back, if people are seeing craft flying around, that's even more significant.
We had one story we were able to correlate with two different sightings in a newspaper article to support that. Heard a story from a math teacher of mine who was dying of cancer. This is back about 2005-ish. Mm-hmm. He sat down and had a cup of coffee with me, and he said, "Do you remember so-and-so? You went to high school with him." I said, "Yeah, well, he was killed in a car wreck. But I got to tell you something, the kid was psychic." I said, "Okay, so?" And he says, "Well, one night he was sitting in my front porch, and there had been all this hoo-ha about UFOs. It was like the year after the Northeast blackout, and we had a lot of UFO sightings around power stations up here in New York." Mm-hmm. And so he said the kid was psychic, and he says, "Well, I'm going to try and call one." And everybody on the front porch, it was a summer night, everybody laughed and everything. And he closed his eyes, quieted himself, and everybody just, yeah, all right, fine, you know. And that was it. And Scott went on his business, on Bob's business, and went home. The next morning, the local newspaper reported that numerous people in town saw a UFO flying at treetop heights on the north side of town where this kid was. What's nuts about it was a person the same date who I met much later, only about 2 years ago I met this person, and we were able to correlate the date back. We said it in his diary, saw it, and he saw it out in the country where it went out and moved out into the country. And he gave me such an accurate description. I was able to go to, you know, the really big chart of, you know, the UFO profiles. Mm-hmm. I was able to pull that out, show it to him, and he said, "That one." You know, none of this a bright light in the sky stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, he pointed at a specific profile.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's pretty cool.
And, you know, what's interesting, too, is I hear from some people, everything from, I've heard one recording of a deathbed confession from a mom. "We saw this back during the war," you know, that type of thing. And then other people who are, you know, getting up there and they fear, well, the government can't come and get me. And that's the biggest predicating thing I hear all the time. They're afraid the government's going to come get them.
Mm-hmm.
Or everybody is going to make fun of them. And the reason they didn't report it back in 1960 or 1970 was because everyone in their family told them not to.
Mm-hmm. Which is weird, huh? Isn't that so strange? I found that strange when I became a field investigator for MUFON, is that a lot of them, you know, would right off the bat say that. You know, "I would like to stay anonymous. I'm afraid. Do you think I'm going to get in trouble? Or is the government going to be mad at me?" It's interesting that people have that perception.
Yeah, you know, and what's funny is when I was working on my national study, the last 6 months I've been crawling through, I've completely compiled all the National UFO Reporting Center data into my own database, and I've scrubbed the data. So I've gotten rid of certain things that were, a report for Beijing, China in Alabama reporting, you know, mm-hmm. I've gotten rid of that stuff. But what was interesting was I find an average of about 6% for any one state, somewhere between 5 and 7%, an average of 6, of unspecified cities. And in some of these unspecified cities in the report, it'll say, I don't feel comfortable telling you, is the answer they put in the city block. Hmm. Or, I've been asked not to tell you.
Wow.
You know, I've seen that probably 24 times in the last 6 months as I've been crawling through the databases.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So I've had to go through the blanks and had put substitute in unspecified, and I count it as a category.
Mm-hmm. So the latest state, now getting into kind of how you do this, how you like to scrub the data and take this data, the latest state you kind of took a look at in your article, I think that was posted today, right? Is Pennsylvania. And what did you find looking at Pennsylvania?
Okay, well, it's interesting. The sample period for the entire study, the records were just coming online in the late 90s, mm-hmm. you know, with BBSs and things like this, and not even quite the web yet. And so citing numbers to chart and plot didn't really get stable till around 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So I took a nice round number, 2001 to 2015, a 15-year sample. And I took every single state, Puerto Rico and D.C., and I crunched their numbers. Okay? And that's what we're publishing in our book, the UFO Desk Reference. It's designed to be a reference book in the library, and it's got charts, graphs, tables. Okay? Doesn't call out any specific UFO, you know, UFO sighting. It's just numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But something we did, Norfolk National UFO Reporting Center data does not have county data. And we went to the trouble of inserting county data by looking at the city. You wouldn't believe how many people can't spell the name of their town.
Oh, yeah. You know? Well, I go through with the MUFON stuff, and I do the same thing. I've been doing that, and yeah, I've found people can't spell anything practically correctly a lot of the times.
Now, what's also, we just negotiated an arrangement with MUFON here a couple of weeks ago, my wife did, and what we've done is we've got the MUFON data. We're in the process. We just finished scrubbing it. I've got some more entries I have to put in that were supplemental. And what the plan is, we're going to be combining it with the National UFO Reporting Center data for the same time period.
Cool.
Right now, it looks like it adds about 35% to the numbers. So, give you like a national thing with National UFO Reporting Center was about 71,000 sightings in 15 years. Add the MUFON data on there, and it's coming in right now somewhere between 115,000 and 130,000 for the 15-year window. That's a huge number.
Wow, yeah.
So that's kind of what we've seen. Plus, I sent some, and I gave you a copy. There's a guy down there, an author down in Florida at the Sarasota Herald.
Mm-hmm.
And he, Billy Cox, he does a blog down there, and he's been doing a lot about the Disclosure Project with Steve Bassett and Paradigm Research. And I sent him some charts, and I showed him what he had for Florida. And he got back to me one day, and he said, wait a minute, you're showing us a pattern over here, because, again, I got county data in there. And he's saying, wow, we're seeing a pattern in some place where there isn't a major population center. Next thing you know, I'm hearing from the chief MUFON investigator down there, Morgan Beal, saying, wow, this is incredible, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that we've added this county data is opening up all kinds of windows to some investigators to look at the patterns and things like this. And that's what we've designed the book to be, is a reference book to the next level of investigation. If somebody wants to look at the tables, they've got stuff there to numbers to play with.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I find interesting, and I was, because I've mostly looked at MUFON data.
Right.
And with the MUFON data, something that you point out is that there was a drop 2015 from 2014. That was in Pennsylvania. You said in other states this happens. And
yes.
Looking at the MUFON data, I always assumed it was because of the television show that MUFON had that's no longer on, or the show that focused on MUFON. What's interesting, though, is that that show was focused on MUFON. You're using New Fork data. So I don't know that New Fork would have been impacted by that television show.
They shouldn't have been.
Yeah, they shouldn't have been. So what do you think about that drop-off?
Either everybody's gotten bored with the topic matter, or there's been a tremendous drop-off in the amount of high-visibility sightings in 2015. Now, you probably notice as well as I do that there's about a 5 or 6 year, a rolling cycle. Where it does dip every few years, about every 5 or 6 years. And I'm wondering if that's the beginning of the dip. But giving example, if you look at what I'm going to call my normal chart from 2001 to 2015, around 2008, it jumps, it spikes. Okay? And John Venturi from MUFON told me, well, that was because we had a documentary out there on national television. And I buy that. It's an artifact of reporting. But what we also noticed is, while it may have dipped a little bit the next year, it started a rising ramp of sightings nationally. Okay? Now, an interesting thing that I've noted is seasonal differences. You guys in Arizona have terrible amount of sightings in the summer months down there, and you have most of your sightings in the fall and winter months. Up here in New York State, it falls off in the winter months, and it's good during the May, June, July, August time frame.
Right, which makes sense because we're hiding from the heat in the summer while you guys are hiding from the cold in the winter.
Yeah, that's what we think it is. I think the biggest thing, you know how this started, this national study? I was going to do a study of the Four Corners area there with Arizona and New Mexico and Colorado. I was going to do a study about that. And when I got looking at just some of the data I had brought down, someone said to me, "Jesus, too bad you can't do this for the whole country." And I said, "I can." So I waited till New Year's Day. Network performance on New Year's Day was astronomically good because everybody was fighting their hangovers, I guess. So I was able to download all the public data that New Fork had that day. Did it all in about 5 hours. And that became my process of developing a process to scrub the data. The first couple of them took me weeks to do. After that, I got it down to an art, and I got it so that I can do it in many hours or a single day on a really big one like California, versus when I did New York State for the UFO Congress down in Arizona, it took me 4 months to scrub the data because I didn't know what I was doing. And now I do, and I've got it down to an art. And for the millennials who are listening, no, there's not an app for that. Because of all the bad spelling, you can't write a script to organize everything the way you want. You have to go in there and really clean it up and get rid of some of the junk and organize it. Once you get it organized, it's fine. Then I was able to get a zip code list, load the counties in there, and here in New York State and in Florida, I even did it by congressional. It's the first time this has ever been done. A couple of months ago, about 2 months ago, I published in my weekly article, I published New York State's UFO sightings from 2001 to 2015 and ranked them by congressional district.
So you'll be able to tell if there's more UFO sightings in an area that goes for Trump or Bernie or something like that. That'll be interesting.
That would be cool. Yeah, we can do that. But what the objective was, though, was to show what I suspected, that was that we have a huge amount of UFO sightings around the borders of New York State and around our water areas. Okay, and the theme for MUFON Symposium this year is Earth, oceans and sky. So I was kind of screening for that particular flavor.
Yeah, which is interesting because I've heard from others who have done studies, although they feel that the data supports that there are more UFO sightings around bodies of water.
Yeah. Well, here in New York State, okay, at most everybody, you talk to anybody in the UFO community, particularly up here in New York, mm-hmm. and they will tell you all about the Erie Lake effect.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everybody talks about the Erie Lake effect. Okay, in fact, the Erie, they've got a MUFON convention there in April, you know, called the Erie Convention, you know. And what's nuts is, when I did the county study for New York State, which was the first one I did because it's my home state and I got to write a weekly column, suddenly I'm seeing a similar thing over like Ontario. Hmm. And when I put that chart up locally, the UFO meisters around here started going, wait a minute, we never knew about that. Mm-hmm. Thank God, you know, maybe there's a base under Lake Ontario or something, you know. Mm-hmm. We thought there would be something around the Finger Lakes. Everybody thought that. There wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It was up and down. It was the Great Lakes. It was up the St. Lawrence Seaway, down the Hudson, and into the Long Island Sound.
Mm-hmm.
That's where all the heavy sightings were.
And when you look at these areas, are there areas that have more like oval-shaped sightings or triangular-shaped sightings? Have you run across anything like that?
I didn't correlate by that,
mm-hmm.
but another New York State guy did. His name is mm-hmm. Tom Conwell. In fact, he just published a book, okay? I can put you in touch with him. Tom is up near Albany, and he did a similar study. In fact, we were finishing our working on our studies about parallel, and we were trading notes back and forth. He started out with a map in New York State and started putting pins in it from, we'll say, orange fireball sightings.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a map of them and where they clustered versus other places. And he has that kind of data. In fact, he took it from New York State all the way down into North Carolina in his book. I'll send you the name of the book because he just published it about 2 months ago. And it's an amazing study of the shapes and where they are. Now, me, I simply went for the numbers. And I didn't break it down by the types and things like that. Though in the book, the reference book we're getting ready to publish, we do a breakdown of the shapes, and we do it by the 15-year window and by month. So you can see what the distribution is by over the years and by the months of the year.
Mm-hmm. So what about... at least for the years, I guess it would be more anecdotal, but over the years you've been collecting these sightings and doing this, have you seen changes in the types of reports?
Yeah. It's interesting. Okay, a couple observations I made from, remember, I'm in both databases every week looking for things, okay? And two things I've observed from the sightings. We owe a lot of our sightings to smokers. I was out having a cigarette. You wouldn't believe how many reports I read like that.
Hmm.
Or I was out having a cigarette walking the dog.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have dogs to thank for this. Hmm. And then it was that flavor of things. I hear that a lot. We had one down. We see up here in New York State triangular UFOs seem to be a big deal along the thruway that cuts right through the middle of the state.
Hmm.
Orange fireballs down in the Catskills and other places, but the Catskills and out in the what we call the Niagara Frontier, out in Erie, out there in Erie, Buffalo, that whole area. And then where we've seen our share of flying discs has been up in the North Country, up along the St. Lawrence Seaway.
Mm-hmm.
That's a kind of a loose swag, okay? I can't give you numbers, but that's roughly what I've noticed playing with the data.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's interesting. And then as far as changes that you've noticed in how the media, have you seen a difference between when you started writing to now? Because I'm sure now that you're writing your blog, you pay a lot more attention to what the media is doing on this topic. Have you seen a difference?
Well, yeah. I'll give you an example. We have a major newspaper here in town, and they're owned by a larger chain of newspapers. And I tried to approach their VP and senior editor when I had all of the county and voting district data. I wanted to go over there and show him 5 PowerPoint slides. That's all I wanted to do. Could not get on his calendar once he knew what the topic matter was. You know, and it's that closed-mindedness that had me bugged. Now, I reached out to the Gannett papers. They're about the major Gannett papers are about 35-40 minutes down the road. I reached out to their VP of editing, who has interviewed me in the past, and I offered this stuff, and the silence was deafening. of course, the New York Times has not been friendly to this topic since the 40s, and especially since the 60s when the Condon Report came out. They published most of it in the paper. I had a reporter that was up here doing a story on a different thing, and I was at the interview as a watchdog to make sure because there were some teenagers at a counseling center, and I was asked as a friend of the counseling center to sit there and make sure the press didn't go over the boundaries and the rules that they had established were the topic matter, you know, what's on the record, what's off the record kind of thing. And she asked me about what I was doing, and I told her about this column, and she was very interested. Well, a couple of months ago, I sent her some charts, because since January 1st, I've been building these charts. And I sent her some charts, and I said, especially this one with the congressional districts, and I said, if you and your editors are interested, I'm available for an interview. Silence. Now, a couple of people close to me are expecting me to get a phone call, either if disclosure happens in the near future, or if Hillary wins and suddenly it's going to be okay to talk about UFOs. You know, that's the smart money around me are saying, you know, we think you'll hear from them. You know, the fact that they did an article recently about that blew my socks off. I never thought I'd see that in my lifetime.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Then as far as your stories, I think it's cool that you're going out and talking to people because not a lot of people do that, unfortunately. And what are some of the fascinating, you know, firsthand stories you've been told or situations that were just kind of fun for you?
Okay, one of the best ones. Two. Let's say the 1930s, okay? I had a little old lady call me up. She runs a horse farm down in Tioga, Pennsylvania, which is Tioga County in New York State. It was right on the Pennsylvania border, but it's New York, okay? She told me a story about a Thanksgiving when she was coming back from Thanksgiving dinner at her grandmother's house in Binghamton, New York. Now, in those days, there wasn't the interstate expressway that there is now. So what was now from Binghamton out to what we'll call the Waverly area now would be maybe a 35-40-minute drive. In those days, it was about a two-hour drive because it was all single-lane road, right? And they went up over this hill, and she was about 8 or 9 years old, about 9, 10 years old, she said. And they went up over a hill, and she screamed to her daddy to stop. They had pulled the car to a stop and said, there's a Greyhound bus down there in the cow pasture. He said, what? And this guy worked for IBM. He was a scientist for IBM. And they got out. She got out. They climbed over the fence. Of course, she was in her Sunday best, and she told me she was stepping in cow pies and all this kind of stuff. And got out there, and there was something, this gray thing, parked out there in the middle of the cow pasture. She said it resembled a Greyhound bus. Now, if you've seen the sketches of what the UFO looked like for the Betty and Barney Hill story, like that, lots of big windows. And they stood there for 5 minutes looking at it, and suddenly flashed. It lifted off the ground, hovered about 10 or 15 feet off the ground, and then shot straight up. And this is a 88-year-old lady who's telling me this story.
Wow.
And we had another one where, there was one that's been reported in National UFO Reporting Center's database. It said, saw a UFO at the World's Fair. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, I'm a reenactor. I do different kinds of reenactment, medieval reenactment, LARPing, that type of thing. And I'm also into what we're going to call early 20th century live-action role play. So I read the article, and I said, fine, because I said it was in 1933. And I was, I guess, half awake one morning, about 5 o'clock in the morning, and I rolled over and spoke out loud and said, wait a minute, there wasn't a World's Fair in 1933. So I started digging into it. There was the Chicago Fair of what they call the 100 Years of Progress. So I thought, well, maybe she was mistaken, maybe it was there. But the description that she gave was more suited to the 1939 World's Fair in New York City. I got brochures from both events on the internet, PDFs of them, and I read about the things that were featured, and it turned out to be the World's Fair in 1939. She just had the date wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So we wrote this really nice article describing what the World's Fair looked like in 1939 and described this UFO sighting that seemed to come down and hover over the nightly performance. They had a symphony orchestra out there and a great light show with gas jets coming out of the water, kind of these water shows, you know, type of thing, water fountain shows, mm-hmm. and that was the nature of it. One of the other big ones we had here that got huge shares was one called The Rocket. In fact, if you Google Cheryl Costa and you Google The Rocket with Cheryl Costa, you'll get this article. It's out there a lot of places on the internet. And this is kid out in Lincoln, New York, out by the Hudson. He was maybe 7 years old, playing on his family's farm. And one day he started hearing this humming sound. And he looked up above him, and he saw what looked to be like, remember what the 1930s Buck Rogers rockets looked like, mm-hmm. you know? And he said it sort of looked like a Buck Rogers rocket. And it started lowering itself. And as it got closer to the ground where he had to lay down on the ground, and it hovered about 3 feet off the ground right above him. Hmm. And there was this ring that was around it, and it rotated and would stop. Click, 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 okay? And the guy told me, he says, to this day, I believe those guys have pictures of me someplace, okay? And he told me, he says, I really wish they would come out with this disclosure stuff. I'd like to know before I die what the deal is.
Yeah, so some tourists that came down to take pictures of the local animals or something, huh?
Yeah, and what's interesting is that the story correlates about the same time period as the ghost rockets that they had in over in Europe and Scandinavia.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the same period. So the consensus by some of us who are doing this is that when we detonated the first atomic bombs, we attracted an awful lot of attention.
Mm-hmm.
And hence, that's why there's such a spike of UFO sightings. You know what's interesting? And I know you must be running out of time here, but I have to give you one last tidbit.
Mm-hmm.
There was a guy who's a NICAP guy, Belcher. Belcher was his name. He was an actor. Okay, he wrote a paper back in the mid-60s. He was an actor, and he was on tour, professional actor. And whenever he was on tour someplace, he would spend his afternoons in the library, since they performed at night, and he was researching in their morgues news clippings of UFO sightings, particularly back around the time of the Roswell incident. But most people don't know, when you watch all these television programs, say, oh, it all started with Roswell. You know, well, we know that. Those of us around this stuff know it didn't start with Roswell. But about that time, for about a month, either way of the Roswell event around July 7th or whatever, there was a massive amount of UFO sightings in the United States, reported in like 38 to 40 states. and the AP was carrying it, and it was all over the New York Times, and they were making fun of it. Well, what this guy did was he went around, copied all these, you know, articles, wrote down all the information from these articles, went back and wrote a paper for NICAP. And he had sighting levels during the middle of June of 1947 to about the end of July 1947 that spiked a couple of weeks before what we'll call the classic Roswell incident. And most people who research will tell you they think what really happened, the two crashes, actually happened a couple of weeks into June. Okay? They'll tell you. Most of the experts will tell you this. So this guy published a paper, and it's available online. I'll send you the PDF for it. And he's got charts in there of where all the clusters were based on where he'd been touring and was able to look at the newspapers. There was an Air Force Army Air Corps general. And when he came back to New York City, the press hounded him and said, "Hey, what about all these UFO sightings and flying saucer sightings?" He's all, "Oh, guys, I've been up in Oregon fishing." There was a huge cluster going on in Oregon the week before when he was supposedly up there fishing. Where he said he went fishing was barely 50 miles from where all the activity was. So there's a lot of stuff. I tell people in my article about a week or two ago, I told people there's still plenty of room to go and research and be a citizen scientist if you want to dig into it.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much out there. And I mean, even though we hear of people interested, not a lot of people doing the digging. And I know people finding new documents. I mean, even if you go through the Blue Book, thousands and thousands of files, you might find documents and information that people really haven't gotten a time to take a look at before.
Yeah, we have a little problem in the UFO community called latest sighting-itis. I've had a number of podcasts call me and ask me to be on their show or one of those KRGA shows, and they always want to know, what's the latest and greatest sighting?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a historian. I look at stats, you know?
Yeah, which is fun, and it's good that people do that because I love that sort of thing, but I always get tied up in what's the latest and greatest, and I don't have time to go back to some of these other pet projects or stories I want to write about. So I love seeing these older stories.
Now, what I love is some of the stuff you've been putting up with Open Minds. Your Open Mind site has been tremendous. I enjoy reading that, by the way.
Thank you.
And it's been very, very, very helpful to me because in a couple of cases you've kind of sparked my interest and I'd go back and say, well, I wonder what else is going around in that state, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd go back and pull my charts up or something. So, like I said, our target right now, Linda and I hope to publish our reference book late summer, early fall.
Great.
And it should be one heck of a paper that goes with it. If you want it for the Congress, invite me.
All right, yeah, send
it's,
us
it's really
what's going on.
Fantastic data.
Awesome. Yeah, send us a proposal and we'll take a look at it. And because we are already getting ready. We're already going to start registration probably June 1st, and we're going to get out some speakers we've already talked to. So, yeah, we're moving ahead.
I'll send you a proposal over the weekend.
Sounds good. So, and if people want to read your stuff, they can go to the New York Skies UFO blog, which is at the Syracuse New Times.
SyracuseNewTimes.com.
All right. Perfect. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I hope you're enjoying. I'm sure it's often chilly out there, but I'm sure the weather's getting better, huh?
They told us this morning we might have some rain and a chance of snow showers this evening.
Oh, you're kidding. Wow.
Welcome to upstate New York. We've seen snow on Mother's Day before, so this doesn't surprise us.
But we
got a funny feeling it's going to be up in the higher altitudes a little bit north of us by about 50 miles.
Well, that's good. Hopefully you don't run into any snow. But thank you so much, and you have a great weekend.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much to Cheryl for being on the show. And as we talked about, you can go to Syracuse New Times and see her articles. We often post her articles in the Open Mind UFO News group on Facebook and in our news, because, of course, we post headlines on a daily basis on the website, so you can read her articles there. But if you just Google Syracuse New Times, like I said, her last article was on the front page, so it sounds like every Friday they're on the front page. So you could read her articles about sightings in the New York area, but historical cases and other things that she talks about there. So, and of course, as you heard, she's got a lot to share. So thank you so much to Cheryl, and be sure to check out her stories. Also, you can check out our stories, the news stories that we talked about, and our weekly YouTube video program, and of course other podcasts at openminds.tv. You'll also see a link there and more ads for our video portal, because we're really excited. We have tons of videos up there, and mostly they are lectures from the UFO Congress. However, we have other exclusive lectures that you're not going to get to see anywhere else, by people you will not see anywhere else, not just Bob Lazar and Jacques Vallée. But we have a Travis Walton and a couple of panels that were related to the Travis Walton case, where, of course, he's a guy who has probably one of the most credible cases of UFO sighting, let alone anything else. But that his sighting, there were several people that saw this thing with him. And, you know, once they saw this UFO, Travis was like beamed by something and then he disappeared. And the guys called the police once he disappeared. And the police officer that they spoke to, Karen, my lovely girlfriend, was able to find that police officer and get him to come to Travis's last conference. And what he said is fascinating. He's a fun, incredible guy. But that video, you can buy the DVDs at openminds.tv, but it's also on our streaming video page. If it's not yet, I think it will be soon. We're getting more and more videos up literally on a daily basis, but we've got tons, dozens and dozens up there. But anyway, that's a video to look forward to if it's not up there, because if you buy the monthly subscription, which is only a few dollars, you have access to all of these videos. We actually have other lectures, too, from other conferences where that are just rare one-offs. So, for instance, these include like the Chilean general who runs a UFO group, people with the UFO group in France. And these are lectures that you're not going to get anywhere else. And of course, it's hard to get these people from other countries. So yeah, a lot of great stuff at our video portal. It's the latest thing that we're working on to get updated. We always get requests for our videos to be streamed. And so that's what we're doing. We're streaming these videos. So really excited to bring all this to you just for a few bucks a month. And it's recurring. So you subscribe and you just have access to all these great videos. So check that out at openminds.tv. Otherwise, also join the email newsletter. I'm going to be sending one of those out this week. I keep reminding you guys of it. Not that we make, well, we don't make money on a lot of stuff that we do. All of our news and everything is free for everybody. But the email newsletter is a great way to keep updated on everything that we're doing. So every 2 weeks we send this out. And it just gives you a notice of what we're up to, so you know you don't miss anything, like some of the cool UFO photo videos that we're posting from our archives on a weekly basis and stuff like that. We send that out usually on Fridays, every other Friday. So on openminds.tv in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a place where you can register for the email newsletter. You can also just send an email to contact@openminds.tv. And ask us to add you, and we'll add you to the newsletter. So you can look forward to that soon. And like every Friday, well, we try to get it up every Friday. If Michael, our creative and amazing video guy, is gone, or if I'm on vacation or something, we don't get one up. But, of course, we have the Open Mind UFO Report that goes up every Friday, and we had a great one last Friday, and we'll have one this Friday. So we also will have another podcast next week. So we've got more great interviews lined up, and it sounds like I'll have to get Chris Mellon on our show before Martin does. Luckily, he's in Russia, so I can sneak in. Just kidding. I think actually I'm already booked out before that. So that little son of a gun might be able to get Mellon before us. But, you know, I think it's great. A lot of people even say this, that we don't ask the same question. So it's more like, you know, you get two interviews with different information if we do have the same people. But anyway, thank you all so much for joining us. Thank you to Caleb Hanks for creating the open and the close music. And it's wonderful to have you guys joining us every week. And we will talk to you next week. Adios, muchachos.